This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
I would like to start with a little history. Everything started in the second century when Antylus, the father of aneurysm surgery, performed the first recorded aneurysm repair with proximal and distal arterial ligation and evacuation of the aneurysmal sac. In 1785, John Hunter performed arterial ligation at the adductor canal for treatment of a popliteal artery aneurysm. And this happened while everybody else was trying to use devices like these, where they apply pressure proximally and distally and hopefully induce thrombosis using compression. In 1888, Rudolf Matthes first performed the endoaneurysmography for a traumatic brachial artery aneurysm. And finally, in 1969, Sterling Edwards described the technique of exclusion and saphenous vein bypass. So these giants before us have perfected the technique of the open approach. The open approach has some problems, as we all know. Exclusion bypass of the popliteal often has continued flow into the aneurysm sac from collateral vessels with possibility of continued expansion. The wound produced is larger than those produced by endovascular repair approaches. The saphenous vein gets sacrificed often, and there is need for long-term surveillance of the conduit. So with the endovascular revolution, a lot of physicians thought that we should add endovascular repair to the open approaches. And as you know, we have two main approaches, a medial approach and a posterior approach with interposition grafting. There is a lot of literature out there for the treatment of popliteal aneurysms, but the three best papers that you may want to consider are having published in the European Journal, our journal, and the Annals of Vascular Surgery, and they are the three latest reviews of the literature. Extremely good, all three of them. Let's take first a look at the fact that frequently these patients are pretty complex and require more than just an endovascular or an open approach. This patient had an aortic bifemoral bypass about 7 years prior, presented with an anastomotic pseudoaneurysm of the right limb of the aortic bifem to the right common femoral artery and a right popliteal aneurysm. We first did a cut down of the right groin, and you can see here the limb of the aortic bifem anastomosed to a 14x7 bifurcated textile graft, one limb to the profunda, the other limb to the SFA. We then accessed the limb that went down the SFA and did a endovascular repair of this popliteal aneurysm with an 8x15 viaband. As you can see here, this is an example of the optimal patient for this type of procedures. I prefer the endovascular approach for patients that are a little higher operative risk, a little older, not very active, have similar size of proximal and distal deployment sites, have at least 2 to 3 centimeters of landing zone proximally and distally. Preferentially, you can use a single device to for your approach and have at least 2 runoff vessels. Now, most of the patients, however, are not like this, and I'm sure you all have treated patients that with a femoral popliteal aneurysm. In this case, this patient had aneurysm involving the distal half of the SFA, the entire popliteal, all the way down to the takeoff of the anterior tibial. And we did an exclusion with a reverse saphenous vein graft. This is the SFA above the aneurysm with a proximal anastomosis. And here we have dissected the popliteal aneurysm is here. This is the anterior tibial. This is the tibial peroneal trunk. And you can see actually the vein coming down and being anastomosed in an end-to-side fashion to the tibial peroneal trunk with a ligation of the popliteal just above the takeoff of the anterior tibial. So, let's start with the findings. These are tables that I have taken from the review articles. What I wanted to show you here is that most of the patients are male, and the age at presentation is 65 years. Now, there is tons of papers reported, most of them with very few patients. The total number of patients included in this review was 4,000. And you will see that the majority of these reports were open repair. Now, this was a very interesting piece of data. Most of the patients present with symptoms. And out of these 59 is broken down as follows: 25 acute limb ischemia, 3% rupture, and 31% claudication. Quite interesting. From this table, I think you see how heavily weighted this sample was towards open repair, and you see that 70% of the patients had very poor outflow vessels. In this table, you can see that most of the analyzed data are from open repair, and 70% of the times, 70 out of this number 80 was medial approach and very few posterior approach. You can see that in the world data right now, stent grafting is only 6% of the patients reported. So we don't have that much data. In terms of complications, you can see that basically there is a little difference in wound infection, not many wound infections with the endovascular treatment. And the incidence of pseudoaneurysm and amputations, and mortality is maybe a little higher than the endovascular repair, and that again reflects the much sicker population that is included in the open reports. In terms of late outcomes, what I wanted to show you is that in terms of primary patency, the 1 year patency is quite different, but the 3 year is more similar. And then what happens is that all of these people that fail, that tend to fail with the endovascular approach, get a bunch of additional procedures done. And then in terms of secondary patency, at the time of 1 and 3 years, the patency rates are similar in the available reports. A different take in the Lovegrove paper published in the European Journal. This is a little confusing chart, but basically what it says is that endovascular repair required more operative time. The reason for that probably was reflective of the early times in the experience curve of the operators. The length of stay is about 4 times less with endovascular repair. The 30-day thrombosis is 5 times higher in the endovascular repair, and the 30-day reintervention is 19 times higher for endovascular repair. The long-term graft patency, however, is, and all of these are statistically significant, but the long-term graft patency is not statistically significantly different. Finally, the review by Dr. Sinha in the Journal of Vascular Surgery is showing that primary and secondary patency appears to be a little better for open, but is not statistically significant. So to summarize, endovascular repair of popliteal artery aneurysms offer similar short and medium-term benefits as open repair. However, short-term graft thrombosis and reintervention rates are significantly higher with endovascular approach. The choice between open repair and endovascular repair needs to be balanced on an individual basis based on anatomical and patient-related characteristics. And in our practice, like I mentioned a little earlier, the older the patient, the less active the patient, the higher risk the patient, and especially if he has at least 2 to 3 centimeters of proximal and distal landing zone, proximal and distal vessels that are similar size, so you don't have to put too many stacked devices of different sizes in the popliteal artery, and the patient that can tolerate dual antiplatelet agent. We keep these patients at least for 6 months on antiplatelets and has excellent runoff. A patient that has this characteristics, we tend to do endovascular repairs. And it's, I think, obvious that the data we have are not enough, and further studies would be necessary to define indications for open versus endovascular approaches. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.